Whether you're a duck or whether you're a beaver, your fantasy team needs a new receiver. It's Danny and Dusty at lunchtime every day. Maybe you're a tortured fan of Rip City. Danny and Dusty are here to take pity, hoping there's not a center with bad knees on the way. Talking noon till 3, Danny and Dusty on the fan. Yep, I'm singing again, cause they haven't said I can't. Danny and Dusty love the teams the rest of us revile. Raising a Blazers banner would make it all worthwhile. Noon till 3.
An Odyssey station.
Hour 3 here on a Wednesday afternoon here on Danny and Dusty. Whether you're listening on 1080 AM The Fan, watching along on YouTube.com/1080AM The Fan, or Twitch.tv/1080AM The Fan. We appreciate you. We love you. And thanks for hanging out with us. And today I'm going to hijack the 2 o'clock hour, at least the beginning of it, to talk basketball, because we are just a little bit more than 2 weeks away from Trailblazers Media Day. For those wondering, September 30th is Trailblazers Media Day. It will be from 9 in the morning till 1 in the afternoon. I will be live and on location. So I'll find a way to sneak some NBA-related tidbits in between now and then. So deal with it.
To quote the Vancouver Forward text line, Did I just hear NBA stuff is coming up in week 2 of the NFL?
Yep.
All right. That's
gonna,
what do we got?
Sneak some stuff in here. A really interesting article that was done by Sam Quinn of CBS Sports, where he ranked the top outwardly traded picks in the NBA right now, and why it pertains to the Portland Trailblazers. There's 68 picks currently out in the ether to teams that they do not originally belong to. 68. That's a lot of picks when you really start thinking about it.
We've seen a lot of marquee players dealt over the last handful of years, and in that, you have had a lot of front offices say, this is a future me problem, not a current me problem. And
likely not even a them problem.
Yeah, where I won't be. Back in like 2019, they were sitting there like, 2025 doesn't exist.
Yeah, I won't be making these picks, so what do I care? And there's truth to that, certainly, for sure. But also, I think under the old CBA, you could do these kind of moves and then you could kind of recover from them via superstar trade after superstar trade. See Daryl Morey. Now, with the prohibitions or inhibitions that the new CBA has heaped upon these teams, with basically a real salary cap ceiling, it's harder and harder and harder to make moves around not having draft picks, which is why you saw the Phoenix Suns the Brooklyn Nets look to exchange their picks back with the Rockets so that they had their future back. And so they could tank over the next 2 years and have their picks back with them, which the Atlanta Hawks can't do after the trade that they made for DeJounte Murray just a few years ago, and they're kind of stuck in this purgatory. The Trailblazers, in trading away Damian Lillard, got essentially the futures tied to the Boston Celtics and the Milwaukee Bucks. Of the 68 picks that Sam Quinn goes through, the Trailblazers have 3 of the top 10.
Hey! Take that, Joe Cronin haters.
And this is when you think about the value of picks. You're tying, and there's 2 teams that pop up in here. It's the Phoenix Suns, the Milwaukee Bucks. Why? Because they're both teams that are A, getting older, and B, are up against it financially. They're both second apron teams. There's no way out, and they're the punishments for staying in that second apron for so long are so prohibitive that teams either need to divest equity to get out, i.e. trading players, or just cutting cash, which means, again, not re-signing or trading players away. What happens when you trade away good players just to save money? Well, you're going to be not as good. And if you look at the Milwaukee Bucks, Brooke Lopez is getting old. Chris Middleton is not as old, but is older because of injuries. Does anybody remember that Chris Middleton had 2 ankle surgeries this offseason?
I do remember that.
Yeah, that was a thing that just kind of came and went, and we'll revisit that when we talk about storylines going into this season. 1 ankle surgery, not good. 2, very bad. 2 in the same offseason, really not bad, or really bad. So you take a look at where the Milwaukee Bucks are positioned right now. The Trailblazers currently own or have the rights to swaps with the 28, 20, 29, and 2030 picks. Now, one of those picks could potentially end up being a pick that is given or sent to the Washington Wizards to satisfy the Denny Avdia trade. Now, I don't think it'll end up being that pick, but we'll see. Hopefully, it's the Trailblazers pick that gets sent out because it means they're in better shape. But if you take a look at what the Trailblazers currently own, that 2028 Milwaukee Bucks pick slides in at number 9 in the top 68. The number 7 pick is the 2030 Milwaukee Bucks pick. And if you scroll all the way down to the number one overall pick value, it is the 2029 Milwaukee Bucks pick. And this just has to do with what is owed versus swaps, and it kind of changes the value threshold. But it shows you that the Trailblazers' draft capital, on top of owning their own picks with the exception of a potential lottery pick between now and 2027 at the Chicago Bulls, shout out Neil Olshey for putting protections on that thing that went into another decade damn near.
So stupid.
It was dumb because of the prohibitions, but it also saved them from giving up a lottery pick because of transactions that the Trailblazers made in that era. You know, Robert Covington. Not
yep.
good. But you and Larry Nance, which is the one that ended up getting this pick. But this positions the Trailblazers in a spot to where if they, let's say Shaedon Sharpe hits or Scoot Henderson hits, or they tank out this season and they get one of those top players, whether it's Cooper Flagg, Ace Bailey, Dylan Harper, VJ Edgecombe, et al. They go into the next era and they have the building blocks going forward. They could find themselves in a Warriors-esque situation when they end up with a lottery pick in their lap when they're a 38 or 41 win team. And that's the kind of thing under this new CBA, where if they start climbing up and all of a sudden they have this very, very, very valuable asset going into that building phase, it could be kind of like adding Harrison Barnes to that Warriors team, where you're like, you're a team that should not have any business having that player, a pick that high on that team. But you find yourself in that position. Or less impactful, but maybe as important as the Grizzlies bottoming out this year with all their injuries and getting a Zach Edey who can help them reinforce their team on a very, very young and very controlled price point. Those are the kind of things that right now you go, it doesn't really matter. But in the future, could it? Or it ends up being something that's very, very valuable in that you use that as a piece to go trade for the guy that ends up being the guy. You know, that ends up being the piece that you go get your Rasheed Wallace with. You know, that puts you in up on a level, it puts you in contention. Otherwise, you wouldn't have been there.
Yeah, and I think that this is that hopium that all of the Blazer fans are clinging to and addicted to right now, but these are also the explanations as to why some of the moves have been made to correspond after the Damian Lillard trade, right? I mean, it is about positioning yourself to be in a window at that time where, as you said, you know, the 2029 pick that may, hopefully, it's your pick that conveys to the Wizards because it's the second most favorable of the draft positions, right? And you go down the road of, all right, why are all of these moves that have been made to build for the future and kind of hold on to staying? And look, what the Blazers did this year with the Advia trade, it was to stay competitive, but we all know still what the goal is, right? It's not to win games. It's to be in a position to where once you get Klingon and then after next year's pick in place, you are positioning yourself for that 27, 28, 29 run where you are going to have assets coming back your way because of those aging rosters, because of the assets that you have compiled to be in a position to where, all right, now it's winning time. And that's truly where winning time starts for the Blazers.
We'll get to more about that stuff as we get closer to the NBA season here. Which,
you know, again, what? I was happy with this. This was good Blazers talk.
See?
I like this.
You like that?
Yeah, three in the top 10. That's optimism, my man.
And those didn't include their own picks, which I would have argued that the Blazers draft pick this year will probably be one of the most valuable.
Probably pretty good.
It's probably going to be really high. So, but as we get closer to the NBA season, which again, we are only just a couple weeks away. In a month, actually. In a month from today, I will be in Seattle for the Trailblazers at Key Arena. What do they call it now?
That would be
Climate Pledge.
We're pledging to a better.
There you go.
Climate.
Where the Portland Trailblazers will take on the Los Angeles Clippers yet again, ahead of the non-expansion that's happening in the NBA. I'm sure. Which we could find a way to talk about that sometime. But Adam Silver needs to be better at his job in that regard.
He's really bad at trying to get people to believe.
that they're not expanding.
That Seattle and Vegas are not the only options for expansion, guys.
Yeah, okay. It's really, really, really bad. But coming up next, we'll pivot back to the NFL. I want to talk about, weirdly enough, the Cardinals and the Giants, because there's two things that are going on, both violently different, but I think very interesting as you take a look at both these teams and some new additions to their personnel. Coming up on Dan and Dusty, 1080 The Fan. A couple news and notes coming out of week one in the NFL. First of all, we're on the Arizona Cardinals and their top draft choice, top draft pick in Marvin Harrison Jr. Despite running 36 routes, he was targeted only three times and caught one pass for 4 yards. There have been a couple things that have come out of this already. One from their offensive coordinator, Drew Petzing, but also from Kyler Murray. I'm going to start with Kyler first, where he says, as a quarterback, obviously, you're going through your read. Sometimes the ball goes to him, but that's not my job, which kind of made me squint a little bit.
Yeah, I think what he's saying is my job is not to force the ball to Marvin Harrison Jr. I think that's where he's going with that. Not very eloquently put, but if he's saying his job is not to go through his reads and find the open receiver, that quite literally is the job description of a quarterback.
So I started to dig into this a little bit, and I saw the notes about the offensive coordinator. I was like, okay, but before reading that, I want to take a look at this. Seth Walder, who works for ESPN in their stats and info department, I believe he's their lead analytics writer, had this note. Okay, this is going to get real nerdy for a second. A.D. Mitchell had a top speed of 20.8 miles per hour. Xavier Worthy, 20.2. Brian Thomas, 19.8. Ladd McConkey, 19.7. Malik Nabers, 18.9. Marvin Harrison, have you seen what his top speed was this weekend at any point in time on the field?
No.
16.7 miles per hour. That is a staggering, staggering drop-off, and has made people wonder, well, is there something wrong with him? Because Seth Walder says there have been 1,730 games played by individual wide receivers with at least 25 snaps since the start of 2023. 1,730. If we look at the top speed for each of those players in those games, Marvin Harrison Jr. ranks 1,699th.
Yeah.
That sounds like a guy who's probably not healthy.
Well, I would also say if you take into context and consideration what their offensive coordinator said about Marvin Harrison Jr., you may get a clearer picture of it because of the fact of he said he was surprised with the attention that the Bills gave Marvin Harrison Jr. from the very first play. So if you're rolling coverage over to that side, if you're working double teams to that side, you're not going to get the vertical shots necessarily that you would get from the other guys who are getting far less attention, like A.D. Mitchell in Indianapolis. The focus in a secondary is not going to be on A.D. Mitchell. It's going to be on Michael Pittman Jr., right? It's going to be, and when you look at some of the other guys, if you're not running vertical routes, mostly what you're running is hitches and outs and quick slants, you're not going to be getting to that top speed where, you know, Marvin Harrison Jr., his top speed is not in question, right? I think it was like 22.6 miles per hour when he was at Ohio State.
Yep.
He has speed. If he's dinged up and he's injured, maybe that's why you're not forcing the issue a little bit more. But there may be this element, too, of Marvin Harrison Jr. attracting eyes and giving up on plays, which is not a good thing either. I think that might be worse if he is healthy.
And that's the thing, is Seth Walder highlights, they ran through all the data on wide receivers from this week. He had the fifth highest vertical route rate among wide receivers in the NFL in week one. So he was pushing it up over the top, according to the NFL Next Gen stats and tracking data. So it makes you kind of wonder what exactly is going on. We do have offensive coordinator Drew Petzing and kind of what his thoughts were from week one as it pertains to Marvin Harrison Jr.
I'd like to say it's just the way it kind of came to be. I think one of the things that, you know, I really try to stress with Kyler is, like, it's not his job to get certain people the ball or worry about how a guy's doing in the flow of the game. Like, I got to do that with the way that I call the game, and he's got to make the best decision based on the look, the coverage, you know, the way the routes are run. So I think that just came up that way. I think that's pretty consistent with how we do things. Now, are a lot of the passes called with him kind of early in the thought process? Absolutely. You know, so I think that just sometimes it comes up and sometimes it doesn't. And I've said this before, sometimes you can call 10 plays for a guy and he gets the ball 10 times. Other times you call 10 plays for him and he gets the ball none. And, you know, that's just kind of the nature of the NFL game. So I wouldn't say that was a forefront of his mind, I don't think, in that second play.
The interesting thing about this is we talked about it earlier about Baker Mayfield with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and what he was caught on video saying, which was, I don't care if they're not doubling Mike, as in Mike Evans, I'm throwing him the bleeping ball.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got a guy who's supposed to be the thing that breaks defenses, should you use him as a decoy all the time, or should you force feed him? Because I watched Matthew Stafford basically shove the ball down Cooper Kupp's throat all game on Sunday night. 21 targets. I mean, that's kind of what that guy's supposed to be there for, yes?
Yeah, yes.
No, maybe not to that extent. that's going a little further.
I think you take Sean McVay's system and Matthew Stafford, and you can kind of throw that to the side because that's what they are supposed to do with the slot receiver on the inside, and that's kind of how their offense is built, is to scheme him open and to force feed him targets. The Mike Evans one, you also have a wide receiver that your offense is built on creating those one-on-one matchups, right? And for, if there's not two guys on him, yeah, go ahead, let her rip, go do it. Petzing is saying that that's not the way their offense is going to be. You know what we've heard out of Marvin Harrison Jr., though, is that if the offense doesn't turn into one where you're getting him the ball, he's going to be disgruntled very quickly.
Oh, no way. Who could have saw this
very coming? Quickly. He is going to want more and more touches as the season goes on. It's game one.
Are you panicking yet?
No.
Okay.
No. I'm not panicking at all. Even with the, I would really, I'm interested to see kind of what the vertical route that Waldron is talking about, or what Seth Walder is talking about, because watching that game, I didn't see him go deep a whole heck of a lot. It looked like he was running a lot of underneath stuff, and I wonder what they mean by how far you're pushing your stem upfield before they, when they call it a vertical route, because I didn't see a whole heck of a lot of it out of Marvin Harrison Jr. Granted, I didn't watch every single snap of that game.
But didn't have the ISO cam on Marvin?
No, I didn't. But from what I saw, it was like he was in. Look, I think there's also a lot of truth to, he was getting open and Kyler Murray wasn't throwing him the football, which that is the baffling
part.
That
feels mildly problematic.
If Petzing is saying, yeah, most of our calls or a lot of our calls early on in the thought process, it is to get him the ball. And you have Marvin Harrison Jr. being NFL open, and NFL open is you have a half a step on a guy. It looked like you probably should be getting him the ball a little bit more. This will get ugly, though. And I wonder how much the drop early in the game factored into Kyler Murray just going off of Marvin Harrison Jr. Because he had a drop early. And if a drop early from a rookie is going to get you no more throws your way, that seems like it's going to be ballooned into a massive problem.
Yeah, because they have so many weapons in Arizona.
They have none. Except for Marvin Harrison Jr.
Yeah, that was the weird thing about this. I was like, I figured it, if at bare minimum, he'd be a guy who would see 9+ targets.
Yeah, I mean, and this is the thing that I don't quite understand is I try to get in the head of, you know, when you hear Kyler Murray say, it's not my job to get him to go through that. Well, yeah, you guys got a high pick on a guy who's a Ferrari, man. Yes, you should try to get him the ball a lot. I agree. Like, the more targets, the better, because they went to Greg Dortch more than they went to Marvin Harrison Jr.
Greg Dortch sounds like he sells insurance.
Greg Dortch does sound like he sells insurance, but when Dortch, Michael Wilson, Trey McBride are your other options, you should probably figure out a way to lock on to Marvin Harrison Jr. Because, and again, their offense, it wasn't what plagued them in that game. It was an inability to stop Josh Allen from going into God mode and running the ball and then
diving
making
into the
his
end zone
ridiculous
with reckless
throws
abandon.
Again. But you have Kyler Murray, you need to throw for more than 162 yards, because that's the one thing he does really stinking well. And he ran the ball really effectively for Arizona. I think he was our leading rusher in that game as well. But you got to find a way to, you're going to start to have to force feed Marvin Harrison Jr. because you had Trey McBride 9 targets, Greg Dortch 8 targets, Marvin Harrison Jr. 3, and James Conner, your running back out of the backfield, 4 targets. You had 3 guys with more targets than Marvin Harrison Jr.
Greg Dortch sounds like the assistant manager and son of the owner at Der Schnitzel House.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good one.
That's a good pull. 100%.
Going to get some great schnitzels there.
I like that. Coming up, we will dive into what isn't going on with the Giants and why people feel bad for the Giants. But first, we're going to have our worst day on the web. We bumped to 2:30 with story time with Uncle Jerry. This one's been sitting there for a little while. We had to let this one cook because this one's I love an absolute gold medal petty Olympian. And we'll get to that and more coming up here. But first, it's Big Kahuna with Sports on Update.
You ever had a Big Kahuna burger?
It's time for today's worst day on the web. With Danny and Dusty on Odyssey and 1080 The Fan.
That sucks.
As it's well documented, I'm violently petty.
Yeah, you are. And I love it.
And look, it is what it is. I have mentioned before, one of the guys that worked for me years ago when I was a manager at a call center, I told him to get off his bleeping cell phone. He didn't want to listen to me, so I took his cell phone and I put it on Craigslist with a picture of a piles. When I say piles, I mean like inside the void of a semi-truck, filled to the brim with raw copper, and said, "I've got scrap copper. Would you like it? Please call me."
Nasty.
For free. His phone did not stop ringing for 3 days. Kept him off his phone, though.
Probably did.
He had to turn it off. He told me, like, he was so angry about it. But afterwards, he was like, that was probably one of the most insanely, ridiculously funny things I've ever seen. He's like, the people that were calling me, he's like, I started answering the phone just because. And they were all unhinged tweakers.
Of course.
All of them. You can, like, hear them scratching their face, like, how much that copper you got? You know, it was perfect. So when I see a good petty tribute, particularly involving a phone, boy, do I love it, because we have what may be the pettiest and best breakup revenge I've ever seen.
McCann's mother has been forced to block dozens of calls after her ex-partner allegedly took her phone number and plastered it on poles here around the CBD. Telling people to call up and impersonate Chewbacca for a chance to win $100.
This would be the most childish breakup I've ever had. Like, all he had to do was be mature and go, I don't love you anymore, I want to move on.
The calls have been waking her and her 3 young children up at odd hours in the evening, and they're yet to stop.
I won $500.
Well, I'm getting phone calls at really strange hours of the night, about 1 o'clock till 4 o'clock.
Forced to call back the wannabe Wookiees and tear down the posters.
Oh, my goodness. And that's a really good one. That person nailed it.
It's so... That's Tarzan.
Yeah, that guy, not so much. Yeah.
I feel like we are only getting one side of this story here. All right? I want to hear this guy's story.
Look, once you see her, the woman that's in this, I think you're like, you're on the guy's side immediately.
Oh, okay.
She looks like every Karen you see in every video.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. She's younger, but if her name isn't Karen, it probably should be.
Yikes.
I'm saying this knowing nothing about the entire situation, but I am 100% judging the book by the cover.
Yeah, is it a petty and childish breakup? Absolutely. It 100% is.
The best kind.
100%. Is this
better than keying somebody's car?
Is this harmless?
It's a mild inconvenience.
Yeah, turn your phone off. Just turn the phone off.
You probably need to disconnect from the world anyways. You just got a breakup.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, you know, Bumble doesn't sleep though, bud. She's back on the market. Maybe she got to check that Bumble.
I don't know how I know this. Bumble rumbles, huh? Okay.
Yeah, I'm assuming that's what they call them on Bumble when you get a notification.
Oh, I thought that's what kept Danny out yesterday.
That's what kept me out was the old Tumble rumbles. But I saw somewhere that Tinder's share of the dating industry has dropped drastically, while Hinge is up like 14%. So I don't know where Bumble sits in all of this now.
I think Tinder is they took that hit over just relentless creeps, right? Hinge, didn't we learn our lesson with Hinge based on the commander's VP of content that went on the Hinge date and got old honeypotted?
Yeah, well, maybe that's what it is. People are going there because they want to see if they can get some more honeypots. You know, that's where they can find the executives that are going to be completely dumb trying to impress somebody to get laid.
Isn't this the history of, like, dating services, though?
Yeah, they go to their rise and then they crater because, like,
yeah,
what was the
Match.com.
Original? Match.com, right? That was, like, the OG.
Yeah, they had a formula for people.
Or eHarmony.
eHarmony, yeah.
eHarmony, the eHarmony guy.
Was that Dr. Drew?
No, that was the old guy. The old white guy with, like, white hair was eHarmony.
Oh, that really boils
that
it down.
Drew?
Well, yeah, no. Yeah, well, at the time, Dr. Drew did not have white hair. This guy was older.
Yeah, Dr. Drew was still doing Loveline with Corolla that time. You know?
Okay.
That was a hell of a show.
Yeah.
On our sister station, 94.7.
Yeah, not a show you could do today.
Right.
Yeah. Not a show you can do today, 100%.
No. I think it's got a space.
Yeah.
I think it's got a space.
Not on public broadcast.
Oh, I remember back in the day, early on when my wife and I were dating, there was a late night show. I think it was based out of Canada, and I forget the lady's name, but people would call in looking for, like, sex advice and stuff. And this lady routinely, she just had the toys all out over the counter.
It was Dr. Ruth?
No, it wasn't Dr. Ruth. She was Canadian. I forget what her name was, but yeah, it was like she got graphic with those toys too up there, man. So wow. Yeah, go Canada.
And then look, they got a lot of problems up there, but they're not.
You
prudes.
Know, that's more telling about your and Mrs. Russ's early love life than anything else. There,
first,
I think you weren't anticipating
first time, long time.
To tell us as much as you just did with that story, Russ.
Well, hey, we are 10 days away from our 22nd anniversary.
Hey,
guess we did something right there.
Well, I guess more people need to watch
Dr. Laura.
No, it wasn't Dr. Laura either, because that's Dr. Laura Schlesinger. No, it was, I'll try to find it during the break.
Vancouver 4 text
Sue
line.
I
met all my
Sue,
ex-wives.
Yes, Sue.
Sue Johnson?
Yes, it was Sue.
Okay.
Yeah, there we go.
Sex talk with Sue. That's what
yes,
it says
there we
here.
Go.
Vancouver 4 text line chiming in very proudly right now. I met all my ex-wives on Tinder.
Yeah, that's right.
eHarmony didn't die. It just went to the way of Facebook and all the boomers use it.
I thought
it was like old people meet. So
yeah.
Again, speaking of funny things, somebody in a revenge got me by putting me on like an elderly singles website, and my email just started blowing up.
Look at this young whippersnapper.
And I was like, they put down there that I was hungry for some. Yeah. Like me some silver foxes.
Yeah, Danny likes mining for silver, huh?
Yeah. Yikes. And my inbox blew up.
Step into the cougar den.
And again, reminder, old folks' homes are the capitals of STDs.
Yeah, they're a giant petri dish.
My college capstone, we had to do a profile of somebody at an old folks' home, and that was one of the things that they told us when we were getting our... You know, they were integrating us into the population, as it will, into Gen Pop of the old folks home. They were like, yeah, I don't know if you guys know this about retirement communities and assisted living
they
homes.
They don't even use the loofahs on the doors. It's everything goes.
You
everywhere.
Got Mildred going through her pillbox. Okay, this one's for syphilis. This is gonorrhea. This is herpes.
Yeah, they don't actually treat it. It's just get accepted. Also, the Vancouver Ford text line. Can we open up the phone lines and call them with our best Wookiee sound? I think that's the exact reason why we don't have open phone lines. Yeah. It's pretty good. It's pretty good.
Yeah. That one's not bad.
Yeah. Mine's okay. It's just a little.
Yeah, see, I've never been able to do it. I'm not even going
to
try.
It's hard to get the high one.
Yeah.
It's easier to do the low one, the. Yeah, see?
See, and that's actually chewy.
The lower one's easier to do. It's the higher pitched one. That's like true Wookiee talent, is when you can do, like, change between them.
Yep.
Dusty has no idea what we're talking about because he still hasn't seen Star Wars.
No.
I'm sure he's generally aware of the existence of Chewbacca.
I know the sound.
Yeah.
I'm familiar with the sound. Familiar with the sound.
The Vancouver 4 text line is being ruthless right now. Num, 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 num. That's Danny on the oldfinder.com.
Well, I think it's all the old ladies, too, because they took out their dentures.
Yeah.
Oh.
I mean, I feel like they probably bet. better.
To quote James Franklin, that makes my skin crawl.
Makes Danny's toes curl, though.
Come here, gummy. Coming up next, I don't know how we pivot out of this, but we're going to talk some more NFL and why one team is feeling sorry for the New York Giants. Danny and Dusty, Danny the Fan. Well, if you watch the New York Football Giants this weekend, first of all, I'm sorry. Why would you do that to yourself? They're very bad. Dare I say they might be the worst team in the NFL?
I mean, they're there.
I think it is a very close race between the Panthers and the New York Football Giants. But the Panthers,
they were supposed to
suck. They get my nod for being the worst team in the NFL because there are times where Daniel Jones can look functional. We're not seeing that through 1 week with Bryce Young.
Which is interesting because Vikings linebacker Jonathan Greenard was asked about the game and his thoughts, and he said, we kind of started to feel a little bit bad for him.
Yep,
talking about Daniel Jones in the Vikings win over the Giants. It was a mauling. It was disgusting. It really wasn't that close. I don't know how that was a 1.5-point margin. That was an insane line, even with Sam Darnold back there at quarterback, because the Giants are dysfunctional. And then coming out from his press conference this week, head coach Brian Daboll of the Giants was asked what he wants the New York Giants offense to be. He replied, scoring points.
Oh, hey. That seems like a good... That's a good... That's a good goal, bar
right?
to reach.
It's a good one, right? He goes, how do
they scored zero touchdowns.
Yeah.
I mean, Iowa manages to do it without doing much of that.
You're not wrong, which is their identity is that...
College football, more special teams touchdowns, more defensive touchdowns.
Sure.
Valid.
Sure. But also, we had a 33% kick return rate, which is the highest they've had in, 7 years?
All right.
So, hey, maybe some special teams juju there. He was then asked how to get Malik Nabers more involved. He said, throw him the ball.
That's a really good... Hey.
He's sharp.
Maybe Arizona should jump on that train. And I went and I watched every one of... We were talking Marvin Harrison Jr. earlier. Mm. I went and watched every single one of his snaps. Somebody on YouTube just went and clipped every single one of his snaps. He didn't run very many deep routes. And when he got double covered, which was on most of the time that he ran past 10 yards, he gave up a lot. Mm-hmm. And so that he was not moving fast, but he was open so many times.
Yeah.
I openly
questioned this when we talked about this in the ahead of the NFL draft and whether or not you had Marvin number one overall or Rome or Neighbors, whoever it was. I want to go with Rome Odunze because I think he's more like Mike Evans and Larry Fitzgerald in the sense of he's just going to show up and do his job.
Yeah.
Where you have an explosive quarterback, and I don't just mean explosive in playmaking, but I also mean in mentality, and pairing a wide receiver who was already becoming problematic before playing a second in the NFL with a quarterback that was problematic the second he got to the NFL just seems like a very dumb idea, especially for an organization that has been nothing but problematic from the top down forever.
Yeah, I mean, Rome Odunze is like the Marty McFly Toyota trucks that you still see driving around now. Like, I mean, that movie's 40 years old, and you still see those Toyotas driving around. Marvin Harrison Jr. is a Ferrari, and you don't see him a lot, and they break down often.
I thought he was a Maserati.
And they're really expensive. Maserati Mav! So one of my favorite Gus-gasms. Yeah, but back to what you were saying about the Giants. Scoring touchdowns is important because I went and I looked it up. They were wearing their 100-year anniversary uniforms that...
The Montreal Canadiens?
Were not great. Their helmets were kind of cool.
Yeah, the jerseys are ugly. Look like they're playing hockey.
Yeah. Their opener in 1924, they also did not score a touchdown.
Hey, look at that. Salute to history.
So, I mean, they really leaned into that play like it's 100 years ago. Mm. No offensive touchdowns in that game. No offensive touchdowns in this game. Scoring points, that's a good one for Brian Daboll. When your quarterback goes 22 of 42 for 186 yards and two picks, yeah, scoring touchdowns, it's a good starting point.
It's hard to figure out where Brian Daboll, you know, kind of sat in the whole Saquon, Daniel Jones conversation. Really, truly hard to figure out.
Not where his GM was sitting. That's for sure. All right, that does it for us. Wednesday down, we start diving deep into NFL Week 2 and the college football weekend tomorrow. We got our picks coming up tomorrow as well. Up next, you got 4 hours of power from their mouths to your ears. It's prime time with Isaac and Suk. Have a great Wednesday. We'll see you Thursday from noon to 3 right here on The Fan.
Bye.
I won $500.